Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, women's voices on culture, style, society and well-being. Radio Gorgeous, where women do the talking.
Welcome from LA.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. I love it here, especially since it's warm.
Yes. Yes, we put on the LA weather for you.
Thank you.
Just to make you feel at home.
Yes.
Yes, your advance party.
Uh-huh.
So you are here promoting your second book.
Yes. Land of Shadows.
Land of Shadows.
Yes.
Which is a detective story.
Yes, it is. LAPD, homicide detective, Eloise Lou Norton.
Who, to me, mm-hmm. on the page, seemed like an extremely much better, well-dressed version of CCH Pounder's Claudette Wynne's of The Shield.
Yes, and she is, because she's from L.A., and she's from, you know, the 80s generation, so she grew up with Guess Jeans and Jordache and Sassoon, and, you know, L.A. ladies, we like looking nice, and, you know, being utilitarian, because she doesn't wear heels all the time. Mm-hmm. She wears nice loafers, but they're nice loafers. So, yeah, and she's a little bit of, you know, me. I like looking nice. I don't have to go to the extreme, but yeah, she's put together.
And she, like a lot of the characters and the people that she's dealing with, and like you, from what I understand, mm-hmm. Grew up in the neighborhood.
Yes. She grew up poor in the poor working class. It's called the jungle. It's the Crenshaw district of Los Angeles. And, you know, historically, it was a place where whites and Japanese lived. These nice, huge apartments with swimming pools in the middle. And, you know, they're really, really nice laundry rooms. And then PCP happened and gangs happened. White flight happened. And then, you know, blacks started moving there. And I remember, actually, when my parents and I were looking for a place to live in 76, 77, there were only a few apartments in Los Angeles that allowed children. And of course, you know, and black children.
Right.
So the jungle, the Crenshaw area, was one of the few places. And we moved there. And I was happy because, you know, look through the kitchen window and I see the Hollywood Hills sign. Mm-hmm. And it's big. It's so far away. But I saw it and it was like, that was a thing for me. It's like, there's Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though it was pretty poor and, you know, there were roaches. And, you know, we were sometimes embarrassed to bring our friends who's moms and dads were doctors and mm-hmm. IBM salesmen, and here we are. And after you wash a cup, you have to turn it over so nothing crawls in it. You know, it was home because the rooms, they were pretty big. And even though we didn't have a swimming pool, we knew, you know, people around us did. So, yeah, Lou came from that, so she's able quickly to empathize with the people mm-hmm. in those apartments in that area.
Yeah, and it's this kind of, I think people here can relate to it, not the sun, the swimming pool, but in terms of living, you know, sort of on estates here.
Uh-huh.
And trying to keep your kids from some of the influences around them.
Yeah.
But the gangs and the drugs and the money, it's very alluring.
It's very compelling. It's very compelling because that's a way out. I mean, doing education or playing ball, it takes some effort to do those things, but it's easy to date someone who can quickly sell weed and turn a dollar and there is your new purse, just mm-hmm. like that. Especially mm-hmm. for girls. Girls have something to give. Girls have sex to trade, even if she's not a prostitute, but there is something that man wants. Mm-hmm. And drug dealers, I mean, they're powerful. Gang members, they're powerful. They basically own that block. And, you know, you try and get your kids not to go that way. My parents were very, very adamant that we were not going to go that way. We didn't have to go that way. You're smart. You're talented. You're going to do this. You're going to read. What's your talent? We're going to find ways, even though we're poor, we're going to find ways to grow that and make you who you should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it has to do with parents or guardians or whoever is raising you to say, no, you're not going to do that. You're better than that. And I'm going to be here to help you try.
And also, but that very act of being there.
Being there.
And so many of these parents, like we start out with Lou's mother.
Yeah.
She's a single mother.
Yeah.
And she's working so hard, she can't be there.
Yeah.
She's not there.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, bad things happen. And there's only so much your mom and dad can do.
Mm-hmm.
And for Lou, saying, let's go to the store, and taking her little sister, Tori saying, go to the store, and bringing her little sister, Lou has to go. She can't be in the apartment by herself, especially back then. And bad things sometimes happen, but sometimes bad things don't happen. Mm-hmm. So it's a crapshoot with your parents saying, I'm going to be away, I'm trying hard, and you know your mom is trying hard, but kids are kids.
Mm-hmm.
Teenagers are stupid. They're mm-hmm. going to do dumb things, and sometimes they get caught, and Tori gets caught, unfortunately. And Lou feels guilty for allowing, even though she's much younger, allowing her sister to get caught.
Okay, and Tori is Lou's older sister.
Yeah.
And when she's very young, her sister goes missing.
Yes.
A scene she sort of partially witnessed.
Yes.
Which has haunted her
mm-hmm.
and her mother very, very deeply.
Yeah.
But she's sort of, there's a part of her that never recovers.
Right.
And
right.
is still searching.
Yeah.
You know, and becomes a detective, mm-hmm. you know, because of that, in that cliched way. But right. that does happen.
But that does happen, right, right.
Yeah.
And I have a sister, and I'm actually the older sister. My younger sister, Gretchen's 2.5 years younger than me. And we were always taught to watch out for each other. We are each other's keepers. And my sister's much wilder than I am. She's calmed down now, but she's a fourth grade teacher in Las Vegas, so she knows how to deal with the crazy because she once upon a time was. But there were only so many things I could tell my sister. We can't do that. We can't go there. We need to stay where mom says so. And, you know, fortunately for us, it worked out. It's Tori and they're close, even though, you know, their years apart are deeper. It's just the three, the mom and those two girls, because dad is away. And so for one to go, for Tori to leave the trio and not have the resolution of coming back, you can't help but be haunted by that. And, you know, personally, it would destroy me. It would destroy parts of me. Even if I found her years later, there's still that part of you that's injured or missing that, you know, you find ways to cope. And for Lou, being a detective and always searching, always looking, always trying to bring endings to families, it's part of her creed.
It seems like family is extremely important to you.
It is.
As well.
Yeah.
Because your first book
mm-hmm.
is about sisters.
Yes. Yes.
So tell us about that book a little bit.
That book, A Quiet Storm, is about basically what happens if you don't do something about mental illness. And in this mm-hmm. story, two sisters, the older, she has bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. And her younger sister is very aware of that and wants her family, traditional black family, in the church. And if you're black and in the church back then, especially, you did not go to see a therapist. You prayed and you were healed or not healed. It's God's will. And Stacy, the narrator, she believes that her sister should see a shrink, and her sister does eventually see a shrink, but she goes off and on medications as is normal. And in the end, Ricky, who's the sister who's ill, her husband goes missing. The story is told about, you know, growing up with a sister who's ill and the marriage that happens, because, you know, a lot of people who have mental disorder, they're brilliant, they're charismatic, and then they go off and then it's a tragedy. But, you know, that back and forth, and for some it can be sexy.
Mm-hmm.
So she lands the
alluring.
Husband.
Alluring.
Yeah, it's alluring, yeah.
And you're not like anyone I've ever met.
Right.
You know?
And
yeah,
probably not.
Yeah,
yeah, and once again, it's the I am my sister's keeper.
Yeah.
Source. Because, you know, that's one of the most important relationships I have is with my sister. So I'm finding a lot of things that I write about sisterhood, mm-hmm. about women, basically, mm-hmm. kind of watching out for each other, because that's all we have.
And is that why, am I right in thinking that you helped in college found a sorority?
Yes, Alpha Kappa Alpha, the first black sorority in the United States, because I love sisterhood. I mean, I'm not, right now, I'm a mom, so I don't get to do as much with the sorority properly, but those girls, those women who I was with in college, they're still my friends today, and they mean the world to me. It's especially in college when you're doing stupid stuff. At least do stupid stuff together.
Yes, and keep an eye out for each other. We always did. Yeah,
we come together, we leave together, and to have a formal, you know, organization to do that. I love my girls, and Lou is in the same sorority, and she has her two, Saida and Lena, who have her back, and you know, they're great together. And each three have different personalities, as any group of women would have. And that was fun writing it, because, you know, all of my friends are somehow a part of the characters that, that I write. I'm always the sober, serious one. I like laughing, but I'm the practical one.
The keeper.
The keeper, yeah. Yeah. I'm the writer. I'm the one who is writing the story and the plot, and it's like, well, we shouldn't do that because...
I can see what's going to happen.
Exactly. So that's me. Yeah.
And tell me about starting a sorority, because I went to a school that specifically didn't have fraternities and sororities.
Well, ours didn't.
But the fraternity system in particular.
Oh, okay.
Seems, well, yeah. You know, there's been a lot of problems with that, and there's a. You know, so I think Animal House is probably the best example of a good fraternity. They seem like fun. But, you know, there's, you know, sexist drinking. There's down in, you know, in North Carolina. You know, is it a good idea to have these on campus? They're very macho. The sororities have seemed to be subservient to to the fraternity. So why did you...
Well, in the African-American community especially, they're a little different because it's all about service. And UC Santa Cruz, where I went, was very stuck in the 1960s, very hippie type thing. So initially, the school was against sororities and fraternities, and we had to justify our existence. And
probably for some of the reasons I was...
Right. And, you know, we had to present to them, it's like, well, for the black community, it's... truly a service organization. And we go to parties and step shows and all that, but our first mission is to do good. And the female sororities and the male sororities, we actually work together. We're sister and brother organizations in many ways. Martin Luther King was in, you know, all these like leaders in the black community are part of these black sororities and fraternities.
So it is
a different, you know, and we have the hazing and all the rest of it, but the first mission, and it doesn't stop at college. It goes on and on till you die.
That's the thing that I see that as a really positive national and ultimately international networking.
Yes.
Group. Yeah. And that's very powerful. And it's, and like you said, sisterhood, which
we're
all for.
We're all for. And then, you know, as you get older, there's the whole networking and jobs and like this, what's happening to me now, I'm relying on my sisters to help promote and that type of thing. And also, you know, I have a 10-year-old, so I want her to do the whole coming out thing, which I never got to do because we needed that money for something else.
Right.
But seeing that she's an only child and, you know, I'm actually in it, I'd like her to live that kind of existence and experience those types of things. She's experiencing this right now, which is really cool. So that's my job, to make my girl aware of everything that's around her.
All the possibilities she has.
And my parents did it, but we didn't have as nearly as many resources as my husband and I do now. So I have no excuse. I know that I'm supposed to do this, this, and this. And even though she's here and school's still going on in America, she has her lessons. Her teacher gave her a big folder of everything she's supposed to do. And I'm making sure that she does it, because I don't want you to ever rest in that way. There's always something to do. And you have the capacity to do that.
Yeah, so that she's who she's supposed to be.
Yeah. And I only have one, so she needs to take care of me when I get older. So you need to be the best you can be, because mommy has to retire sometime and you have to take care of me.
Radio Gorgeous, the sexist station where you'll only hear the female voice.
And her coming about was, it sounds like it started off in the normal way.
Yeah, it was a dream. My husband and I waited years and years after getting married to have a baby. And so we got pregnant the like a month after he decided to get a two-seater. Because we had been trying and it wasn't happening. He's like, well, it's not happening and who knows when it's going to happen. I'm like, well, fine. Get your Nissan 300Z. have at it. And then the next month we were pregnant, and I'm like, uh-oh. And so
bye-bye car.
Although he did keep it in, well, that's another story. So it was, you know, we were thrilled because we'd done the big trips. I gotten the expensive shoes and handbags. We'd gotten it out
you
of our
had
system.
The single life,
right?
We had a house. Yeah, you had the married life together without the kids.
Yeah, great jobs and all the rest of it. And you know, my second appointment with my OBGYN, she felt a lump, and she's like, "This feels, you know, kind of weird in my right breast." And she's like, well, maybe it's just the estrogen. Because, you know, when you get pregnant, things get bigger. And that's
huge
lovely.
Hormones.
Right. And, and so I made an appointment in the third month. Went to the doctor, to the radiologist. And then the radiologist called in someone else. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm pregnant. Things are strange. They're moving around.
But and you then, have those happy pregnancy hormones, too. That
yeah.
Are,
that's and I'm lying there. It's fine. Dark, it's and fine. It's nice, and it's quiet. And then a third doctor comes in, and then they show me. They point to the screen and say, that should not be there. And I'm like, well, what is it? And they're like, we don't know. But this lump thing, it shouldn't be there. So I was sent to have a formal MRI. And came back for the results, and I'm thinking, I'm going to get to go home again. And they're like calling more doctors in. And by this time, the lump's gotten larger. I'm feeling it. You can actually feel it. And I feel myself getting lopsided, even with pregnant breasts.
Wow.
And so they're like, well, we have to do a needle biopsy. I'm like, oh, okay. By this time, I'm starting to, this is not normal. This isn't good.
Yeah.
So I have a needle biopsy, which is probably so painful because they're sticking a needle in sensitive breasts and pulling out a sample. And by this time, it was August.
And of course, it's growing faster
and
because
growing
everything
faster.
Is growing faster.
Because, yeah,
everything's accelerating.
Estrogen is just feeding it. And so it's larger and larger. We get the results back. And my oncologist by this time, I now have an oncologist, which I'm like, well, that's not a regular doctor that... Onc is cancer. And by this time, I'm supposed to be eating and doing all this stuff. So I'm not gaining weight because I'm starting to realize my pregnancy is not going right. And I'm subsisting on steak tomatoes with cracked pepper and sea salt. And my parents are making me beans, like lima beans, black-eyed peas, anything to get me to have protein. And the smell of silverware makes me nauseous. So I'm not eating. And then what you used to eat makes me sick. Something's going on with my body. You know, the babies, Maya's doing fine for now because I'm healthy otherwise. So we get the needle biopsy back and they're like, we're going to have to cut this out because we know these are bad cells. We just don't know what type of cancer yet. Mm. So at 4 months, this is in September, I have a biopsy and I'm freaked out because before the surgery, the problem is I'm pregnant.
Yes.
So I just can't go under because me going under means my baby will not make it. But I'm still having to sign papers that say, well, she may not make it. And I'm like, I have to sign them because if I don't make it, then
she really can't make it.
Right. But... So I find I'm already religious. I was raised Seventh-day Adventist, but I was never into dogma. I was... personal relationship with God is how I am. And so I'm quite prayerful. And at one point I'm like, well, you know, I fought for her. I will be done. So I've signed all the papers and I'm at UCLA, which is one of the best cancer centers in America. And they have two monitors, one heart monitor for me and one heart monitor for Maya. My husband's there holding my hand the entire way. We pray. And then they give me whatever it is, and it's kind of asleep. It's not totally under. And we say goodbye, and they wheel me out. And the next thing I know, I wake up. I'm in those warm blankets, and they're like, okay, she's okay. You're okay. Yeah. And they're like, her heartbeat's fine. And we're going to send you home because they send women home after breast surgery.
Unbelievable.
I, you know, promptly throw up in the car because all the... Right. And
between the adrenaline and the, you know, anesthesia.
Right.
And the, sorry.
Yeah. I know.
Wiping tears away.
I keep myself... And the reason... It's weird because I'm supposed to stay home as long as I want. Yeah. But I'm terrified, right?
Yeah.
So I go back to work. I go back to work after 3 days.
Just to feel normal.
Just to feel normal, because my husband's been taking, they hook you to a pump, and all the lymph fluids come out, and he has to measure, and I love him to this day for doing this. He has to measure the fluids every day, and, you know, big gash and bulky right here, but I go back to work because I have to. I have to, because my life is changing, and this is the most normal thing I can do. So the results come back in 2 days, and my oncologist is like, you have a breast cancer, but it's not your typical one. It's called a phyllodes tumor, which is 1% of all breast cancers is this. So the good thing about that was I didn't have to do chemo or radiation, but they had to do like a major lumpectomy, because by now it's grown even bigger.
Yeah.
And so they're like, this is a more serious operation, which means we want to wait just a little while longer so to give your baby a chance. And so on, I think it was November 3rd. So I got that in October, so I had to wait a month. And I'm 6 months pregnant now. Ugh. Yeah, and meanwhile, it's growing. It's growing.
And every day you're like, I'm pretending it's not happening.
Right, I'm pretending it's not happening. I'm working. I'm writing. Writing has been my therapist my entire life, but especially now when I just want to crotch over and cry. So I'm doing all this, and you know, parts of me is still holding back with buying baby stuff.
Of course.
Because I don't know.
I can't invest.
I can't invest, because what happens if? And again, being the writer, you always wait for that shoe to drop. So I'm
You've got to hurt your characters something to happen.
Right.
I don't want to be that one.
Yeah, yeah. And so November 2nd or 3rd comes. It's Election Tuesday. And it's the election where Californians throw Gray Davis out of...
Oh, yeah.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger gets... And I didn't get to vote. It was my first time not voting. And
so it was your fault?
Right. And, you know, at this point, I'm working at the ACLU. So I'm very... I know about politics and social justice and all this. And here I am.
You're very active.
Right. Yeah. I'm very active. And I'm at the hospital about to go under, and I rail on that more than anything, because it's like, this is not good.
My civic responsibilities are like, this is all wrong.
Yeah, it was all wrong. And so again, I had to sign the papers and advance directives and all the rest of it. And once again, the heart monitors, which that struck me more than anything, because I'm looking at my baby's heartbeat, and it's like, well, okay. So
it's good for now.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah. And my husband says goodbye again. And I wake up again. And I'm okay. And she's okay. And, you know, they cut it out and they cut margins. And so I'm like concave. But the beautiful thing about pregnant boobs, I still had enough to fill some out. Some. And again, I still want it normalcy, because now I have to wait and make sure that they got it all. Yeah. So I'm still going back to the doctor, and they're still checking the fluids, and you know, it's all that stuff that's associated with breast surgery I'm still having to do, and they can't give me the pain pills that I want, so they have to give me something else because I'm pregnant, I'm still not eating, you know, all this stuff. And they come back and they're like, all the margins are clean, and you know, we'll watch you for the rest of your life, and Maya's healthy and all the rest of it. And I have Maya on, you know, February 20th, which was 2 days before her father. And, you know, I'm like really making sure she's okay, because I've been on all kinds of meds. I only gained the 25 pounds you're supposed to gain.
Oh my God.
That's all I gained.
I gained all of your other
ones. that's where it went.
That's where it was me. I was eating.
Yeah.
And I was eating your food. Eating,
thank you. Thank you so much. Smelling
the silverware and loving it.
So her middle name is Grace, because that's what I received, because there's so many stories of women who didn't make it or whose babies didn't make it. Mm-hmm. And to this day, when she was very, very young, we didn't know she was allergic to milk. So she cried and cried and cried. And so I ended up falling asleep in bed with her on my chest. Mm-hmm. And even when she got past that, I didn't want her to leave me, because I had fought so hard for her to be here. And to this day, she's still in bed with us, because and I always thought, well, you know, second kid, if I ever had one, they wouldn't have that bond that she and I share. Like, and she's starting, as she gets older, she sees my scar. Mm. And she knows that mommy goes back twice a year, because I had another scare after that when she was three.
Wow.
And but they were on it. They cut it out. And but she's very aware that mommy works hard, because one, I'm a control freak, and I can't I can't control my DNA. I can't, my body likes making lumps for whatever reason. But mommy works hard because she knows how important it is to live your fullest life. And I do it for Maya too, because I don't want her to ever think of me as, you know, a victim. I want her, if something ever happened to her, to see that you can make it. And even if the ending is not as happy as it could be, you did as much as you could to kind of tilt the odds your way. And that's when I decided, because I had been dancing around writing a crime novel, but it's like, I'm not a cop, and, you know, my sister dates cops, but, you know, but it's a big thing. But after that, I'm like, okay, I face the worst fear. I'm going to write a crime novel, and I'm going to do it, and I'm scared. I'm not scared anymore. And that's when I started on Land of Shadows, as my, like, screw it, I'm doing it. If it works, fine. If it, I want to do this, I'm going to do it. And here it is, and it's fun. And it's, you know, looking back and remember, you know, I have visceral responses sometimes, because it's like, okay, I remember I wrote that scene when I had to come from I'm in the high risk program at UCLA, and that means MRIs twice a year, mammograms twice a year, all of it twice a year. So by the time you're finished getting over it, it's time for the next
one. Yeah.
And so I remember writing scenes in my car, like at the doctor's office, you know, waiting to go in, as that kind of like control and therapy type thing. And yeah, some scenes I can't even remember them, but something happens where it's like, I'm holding my breath because I'm remembering that, oh yeah, I was writing that in the waiting room or in the car or somewhere. Mm. Yeah.
Well, it's also struck me as Land of Shadows is book number one in this series of Lou Norton. I had a feeling we were going to see Lou again.
Yes, I turned in number two.
You have?
Yes,
wow.
Yes,
awesome.
it's called Skies of Ash, and it should be out around same time next year.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, and it's more of her, and I've written it so that I like standalones, and I, as a reader, and I've written it as, of course, Lena and Saida are here, and some Colin is there, but it's a whole different crime, because I like that as a reader, and I'm such a book slut that I like kind of read everything, and so this is how I wanted it. So she is back again, and she's just as Lou as she wants to be.
Excellent. Well, and of course, since you're from LA, I have to ask this question, because it does have a sort of a, could be a series, could be film, could be, you know, who would play Lou?
Funnily, it's weird because the woman I see is actually, she's a British actress, Martha Jones, I love her. I think she's so beautiful. And after seeing her in 28 Days Later, I hope one day I get to see it on either the big screen or the large screen.
Yes.
Because I think it would be. It would be.
Yeah. And especially as a woman in that prime role.
Yeah.
And there are so many contradictions to her. It's great.
Like women. Yeah. I mean, and that's how I wrote her, because it's like, I've read some things, and it's like, okay, she doesn't have to be so hard, and she can, you know, still cry, but she doesn't have to be weak. You know, it's like, the women that I know, we're all big, wonderful contradictions in many ways, and that's how I want her to be. I want her, you can't figure her out, and that's who she is. You almost can, because you know that she's not who you're going to think she is, and that's perfect.
Yeah. And that was perfect.
Oh,
thank you so much, Rachel. Thank you for sharing with us here on Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you for inviting me. This was really cool.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us. Contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com. And to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox, who can think of anything better, darling?